compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hello and good morning. This is Patrick Madrid back on the microphone after a week of R&R in the sunshine of, dare I say it, here we are in the depths of winter, cold and snowy. Nancy and I got a chance to get away for a week to the Caribbean. May I say to you, and was it ever a nice break? I'm not trying to rub it in. Please forgive me. I realize that most of you listening to my voice right now are looking out the window at snow or gray and cold. So please forgive me. I'm not gloating. I'm just saying that's where I was. And I'd like to begin by thanking my colleagues, Ken Hensley, first of all, for filling in for me. He always does such a great job. And when I got back to my email, my show-related email anyway, just email after email after email of you listeners just extolling what a great job Ken Hensley did. And I forward at least some of those on to him so that he can see what you're having to say. And so thank you, Ken. I don't know if you're listening. You're probably sleeping in this morning. I wouldn't blame you if you did. But thank you for filling in. Thanks for doing such a great job. I always know that I can leave the show in good hands if I have to take a break like I did last week. And so thank you, Ken. Also, thank you to Father Matthew Spencer, who is an old pro at Relevant Radio. He had a show here for years. The only thing that got in the way was that he was elected provincial superior of his religious order. So it tripled probably the workload that he already had, which was big enough. So it just got to the point where he was unable to really do the show, his show called St. Joseph's Workshop. He just couldn't do it anymore due to time constraints. So it's always a great pleasure and a joy to have Father Matthew come back and fill in for me. Everybody, it's interesting, while we were away on this excursion, we had a group of, I don't know, 45 people or so with us. And at dinner or lunch, more than once, people would say, well, what does so-and-so look like? Because I only hear him on the radio. And I would describe what so-and-so looks like Father Matthew Spencer, for example. And invariably, people will say, that's not how I pictured him. I pictured him totally different. That happens a lot with Cyrus. And Cyrus is an object of curiosity for many of our listeners and people. You know, they have this idea in their minds of what they think Cyrus looks like. And I said, no, just go look at my Twitter feed and I'll show you what Cyrus looks like. And of course, Cyrus always objects and he says, that's not me. It is him. Just type in at Patrick Madrid in Twitter and then Cyrus, and you should pull up a treasure trove of pictures of Cyrus. In any case, it was great. So many listeners who were part of the group that we went with, it was wonderful how many of them talked about how they listened to Relevant Radio on not only a daily basis, but a great part of the day. Every day. It's just appointment listening, and they love it. So shout out to all of you who are with us in our excursion this past week in the sunshine. It was great. So great to meet all of you, see you in person. Some of the people I only knew from Twitter, and they were diehard regular Twitter interactors with me, charter members of Team Taco. So it was great to see them. But I want to share with you an incident that took place during this event. So we were on a cruise ship. And if you've ever been on one, you know that the porter who is assigned to your room is the man. Typically, it's a man. Sometimes they're women, but most of them seem to be men. They are responsible for just the meticulous details of making sure your room is clean and tidy, and they do such a great job. And I had brought along with me probably 300, 350, 400 maybe of my business card that has a QR code on it that takes you directly to Relevant Radio. So when you scan that QR code, and everybody's fascinated by QR codes. Young Thomas, you're fascinated by QR codes, right? If you saw a QR code, what are you going to do?
Oh, 100% I'm going to scan it. Those are amazing. They're the best. I love them.
Yeah, and it's kind of mysterious, isn't it? Like, you don't know what's behind the door. What am I going to find on the other side of that QR code?
Yeah.
And you want to know, right?
And it's super accessible, and it's just very tempting there, yes.
I agree. Well, knowing that, and by the way, welcome back, young Thomas. It's good to have you. Engineering. Cyrus is off for a few days. So yeah, thank you for filling in for him.
Oh, thank you very much. Appreciate it. This is quite the honor, Patrick. Thank you.
I have a feeling when you're a middle-aged man, I'll still be calling you Young Thomas. When you're an old man. Well, I may be in heaven by then, but
that's fair.
Young Thomas. Everybody call. And people who were part of our group this past week, they were referring to you as Young Thomas. It was great.
Yeah,
all in the family.
It's starting to happen now around the workplace too. People are like, "Hey, Young Thomas," and I'm like, "What?"
Good, I like
it. It's awesome. It's awesome.
Good. So let me think where I was. Okay, QR codes. I left a popcorn trail, so I know exactly where I'm going with this one. By the way, here's my number, 888-914-9149. You can dial me up now. It's a Monday morning, so things get off to a little slower start, but don't worry. We can get you in. Just call 888-914-9149. So here's what happened. So I went with about 350, 400 of these cards that give my contact info, but the key to the whole thing is this QR code that takes you directly to the show page at relevantradio.com/Patrick. So this is the cool little story. It has two parts. The first part was early in the week, I was giving a talk one morning to our group, and I asked them to pray that the Lord would send me the right Catholic person from the crew to whom I could give these 350, 400 cards with the request that that Catholic person on the crew would distribute them among all the Catholic folk. They could give them to non-Catholics, of course, but you know, when you go on one of these events, at least this ship anyway, there's like 4,500 passengers and, I don't know, 1,500 crew members maybe. So the ratio of passenger to crew member or crew member to passenger is rather small. So it's excellent service and people are always busy taking care of the food and everything. It's wonderful. So my prayer request that morning was, Lord, please send me the right person to whom I can give these cards so that these cards then can proliferate throughout the crew, who will then, of course, because keep in mind, these people, they come from far-flung places like the Philippines and Indonesia and throughout the whole world, Africa, you name it, anywhere in the world, they're coming. And many of them, they have left behind a wife or a husband, children very often, and they're working hard. I mean, they work very hard in long hours. And I don't think I really ever knew this. They don't get time off like you do. Like you clock out at X o'clock every day, right? So you're off the clock at a certain point and you get weekends off, chances are, and X number of weeks you get to take off, you know, for vacation. The way these these cruise ship crew members do it is they work for like 8 months straight with 0 days off. They have a few hours here and there each day to wash their clothing or, you know, catch a cat nap and write emails, whatever it is that they want to do at that time. But they don't have days off. So when the ship returns to the port on Sunday and all the people are herded off the ship, they're turning that ship around very quickly. And the next 4,500 people are going to be boarding that ship within a matter of probably something less than 4 to 5 hours. So they have to turn the ship around entirely, replenish it, clean it, make it exactly as though it's the first time anyone ever set foot on the ship. And they, as I say, they do a really good job. So that was my prayer intention. I asked our group to say a little prayer. Well, within an hour or less, I stopped in at my cabin and our steward was there, young man, very helpful. And I asked him, I said, are you by chance Catholic? And he said, no, I'm Hindu. I'm from Indonesia. Then I said, oh, okay. Well, the reason I ask is, I'm Catholic, by the way. The reason I ask is that I would be interested in finding a Catholic crew member who might be willing to take some of these cards. And I handed him one of my cards. And I said, if this Catholic crew member might be willing to take a batch of these cards and then just, you know, casually give them out to the different Catholic crew members who are on the ship because there's stuff in here that might be interesting to them. And he said, I can find someone for you. So I thought, you know, maybe by the end of the week, he might find somebody for me. I hadn't even had time to leave my cabin. So within less than 5 minutes, he brought back this young woman who introduced herself. And she said, I'm Catholic. What's up? And I said, oh, well, okay. And I told her the story. I told her what I was interested in. So her eyes lit up And she said, "Oh yeah, sure, that sounds great. You have a radio show, and can we listen to it at odd hours? Because we, you know, we're working, we can't listen to your radio show when it's live." And I said, "Oh yeah, Relevant Radio has a wonderful app. You can download it. Doesn't matter where you are in the world, download it on your phone, and you can listen to not only my show but all the other shows on Relevant Radio at a moment's notice, anytime you want to do it." So she thought, "This is great." So she took this big stack of cards and off she went. Well, that was that day early in the week, and I had mentioned to the porter of our room, I was trying to explain to him what this was for. I said, "We're Catholic, we believe in Jesus, and we, you know, Catholics believe in Jesus and so forth." And it didn't really register that I could see. And I tried to explain it to him. I said, "You know, Jesus lived 2,000 years ago, and he is God who became man, and he died on the cross." And I said, I guess you probably don't really know much about Jesus. And he said, "No, I don't." Okay, so that was that first day. Well, like the second or third day, a couple days go by, and I had the occasion to go back to the cabin to retrieve something, a hat or something like that. I go back to the cabin, and as I'm standing out as I'm coming out into the hallway, he sees me from down the hall, and he comes over. And I would guess him to be maybe mid-20s, I guess. And he came over to me, and he starts kind of like shooting the breeze. So he's just having a good time. Is the cruise good? And normally the cabin stewards don't typically do that. So I got the impression rather quickly that he was talking with me and asking questions because there was something on his mind. And very quickly, that is what happened. So he said, you mentioned Jesus a couple of days ago. I said, "Yeah." He said, "I'm interested in knowing more about Jesus." And I said, "Oh, well, I'd be more than happy to help." So we talked for a few more minutes, and I gave him a kind of a quick overview of Jesus, a little bit about the gospel. God loves you and wants you to be happy. He sent his only son to save us from our sins. But right around that time, his supervisor noticed what was going on. And I don't think it had anything to do with talking about religion. It's just that this guy wasn't doing his appointed rounds. And so the supervisor starts sidling over, and I could tell, well, I don't want him to get in trouble. So we sort of broke off the conversation. I said, give me your email address, and I'm going to get you information about Jesus. Because keep in mind, he's a Hindu, and he really didn't know much of anything about Jesus. So over the next day or so, I was able to get, because I told him, "I think you should read the four Gospels." Because he said, "Is there a book I can read or something that you would recommend that will tell me about Jesus?" And I said, "Yes, read the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John." He wasn't sure what those were. He didn't know what those were. And I said, "Well, you've heard of the Holy Bible?" "Yes." "Well, these are four of the writings in the Holy Bible that were written, two of them by Matthew and John, who are eyewitnesses of Jesus. They saw Jesus. They lived with him for 3 years. They saw the miracles. They were there at every step of the way. And then the other two, Mark and Luke, they were not eyewitnesses, but they interviewed the eyewitnesses. They lived contemporaneously to the apostles. So although they themselves never saw Jesus, they interviewed all the key people who were involved. And their two gospels are the amalgamation, you might say, of the eyewitness accounts. St. Luke, by the way, if you're interested, read Luke chapter 1, beginning in verse 1. Where he describes why he's writing this gospel. And he says, "You know the truth about Jesus that you've been hearing, it's been preached to you. Now I'm going to write everything down in an orderly sequence. After interviewing all of the eyewitnesses, I've put together the chronology of the story of Jesus, and I'm going to put it down now in written form so you can know the truth of what you had been told verbally." So these first Christians did not have scripture to go by. They didn't have New Testament scripture in any case, but the oral tradition, the oral apostolic tradition that carried the same weight as the written scripture. He says in Luke chapter 1, verse 1, "I'm writing this down so that you'll know the truth of what you have received through these oral teachings." So what I did, and I'll leave it at this, what I did was I went to there's several different Bible websites. So there's Bible Hub, there's blueletterbible.org, and a variety of others that have translations of the Holy Bible into different languages. And so I believe it was Bible Hub. I found a variety of different Bible translations in Indonesian. And because, of course, the steward spoke English, but his preferred language from his home country would be Indonesian. What I did was I sent him an email that had a link to the Gospel of Matthew in Indonesian, Mark, Luke, and John, so that at his leisure, he could fire up his phone, click the link, and as time permitted, he could read the Gospels and encounter Jesus in the Bible in his own language. And I included links to a few other things that might be useful to him. I included a link to what I presume to be his home diocese back in Indonesia. It's in Indonesian so that he could make connection with the Catholic community there. I also suggested to him to seek out Catholics on the crew on his ship because they would be there to help him and answer questions, et cetera, et cetera. So all of this to say, that to me was the greatest blessing of this week away, having a bit of time in the sun. That to me was the biggest blessing of all. And the reason I mention this to you is because you have access to the same kind of, I don't know, the same kind of providential means that I had. All you have to do is ask the Lord, Lord, send me the right person, or send me to the right person. And originally, I thought that my prayer had been answered completely in the form of the young woman who came over and I gave her all the cards and off she went. I thought that was the answer to my prayer. Little did I realize that it was actually, and maybe even more powerfully, the young steward who was kind of the go-between for all that to happen. It may be, more than anything else, for his sake. So in your kindness, in your daily prayers, if you would remember not only these particular people, and I don't want to say their names only because I want to keep their privacy intact and I just want to honor their privacy, but if you would remember them, especially remember this young man from Indonesia, he's a Hindu, he's now learning about Jesus, would you please pray for him and ask the Lord to just shower his mind and his heart with all of those lights and graces that would be necessary for him to come to faith in Jesus Christ and come into the church, receive baptism and the sacraments. What a glorious thing that would be. And maybe many years from now, when you get to heaven, an Indonesian man will approach you in heaven and say, excuse me, you and I never met, but I was on a cruise ship a long time ago with Patrick Madrid. And he gave me some stuff, and it helped me on the journey. And you, because you prayed for me, your prayers were instrumental in my receiving faith in Jesus. It could easily happen that way. So in your prayers, please remember these people. And then lastly, if you would remember in your prayers also this hidden universe of people. I mean, they're pretty much out of sight, out of mind. You don't really think about, I don't really think about them. Now I do. But all of these hundreds of thousands of men and women who are working on these cruise ships, below decks, behind the doors, they're not typically out where all the folk are getting their food and sitting by the pool and all that. These people are busy, hard at work because that's their job. And they can't get to Mass for months and months, maybe like 7 or 8 months at a time. So imagine yourself a Catholic crew member and you can't get to Mass for 7 months. You can't get to confession for 7 months, which is a typical stint before they go back home for a couple of months of vacation. Then they come back and they do it all over again. They don't see their families. They don't have access to the sacraments. I mean, talk about a difficult life, especially trying to maintain your Catholic identity and your faith in Jesus. It's got to be very difficult. So maybe just in your prayers, just remember them and pray for them and ask the Lord to send more people with business cards that have QR codes to relevantradio.com. I'll be right back right after this.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
We are back. Thanks for listening. I am back from vacation. So it's really me. Happy to be back on the microphone. I missed you. Did you miss me? My number is 888-914-9149. Let's go to Megan now in Green Bray, California. Where is Green Bray?
Hi, Green Bray is just north of San Francisco, about 20 minutes.
Okay, I know Millbrae, which is just south of San Francisco, but I hadn't heard of Green Bray. All right, welcome.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Patrick. Welcome back from your trip.
Thank you.
So I have a situation this week. Okay, on Friday, we get the weekly news from the first grade teacher. In that newsletter, this is a public school. So this coming up week, all the first grade teachers, about five classes, are going to be reading a book called My Princess Boy.
Oh, how sweet.
I'm joking. Yeah, of course. Thank you. And so my first instinct was, you know, I would try to keep her out of school that day and just avoid that one. Last night I listened to the book as a read aloud. Mm-hmm. I do have concerns about it, just like I thought I would from the title. I have concerns about them reading that to the kids. And I'm just wondering, do you think I should just deliberately try to keep her out that day? I mean, I know I've heard you talking before as far as it's probably better to take them out of those schools, mm-hmm. which I like the idea. And I have a fresh shot now in second grade to take her out of public school. Mm-hmm. So thanks be to God for these chances. But for this week, I just wondered if you thought I should just not make a mountain, not make a big deal, or maybe just keep her out that one day, take a field trip somewhere else.
Well, if it were me, I would do both. I would make a stink about it. I would raise Cain with the teacher and or the administrator, whoever you know, maybe both. I would protest this earnestly, vigorously, vociferously, and I would also not allow my... What grade did you say your child's in? First grade, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, no way on God's green earth that I would ever allow one of my kids to be in a classroom where they're doing that. No way.
Yes. Thank you.
I just looked up the book, so I'd never heard of it before, but here's how it's described in the, I guess maybe from the back of the book cover. A heartwarming book about unconditional love and one remarkable family. Dyson loves pink sparkly things. Sometimes he wears dresses. Sometimes he wears jeans. He likes to wear his princess tiara, even when climbing trees. He's a princess boy. It goes on from there, but that's enough to know.
Yes.
This is terrible. This is detached from reality. Go ahead, Megan.
It's really sad. It's a recruitment process, I feel like, here in our state or something. And I am not okay with it. And the message in the story is his brother loves him so much. His mom loves him so much and tells him he's pretty. His dad loves him so much and tells him he's pretty. And then so it's this message that a young kid gets is, oh, there's so much love in that choice, which is a lie.
Yeah, so in other words, the people like me or you, these hateful, evil, intolerant people who won't go along with this craziness, you know, we are obviously in their eyes the antagonists. The protagonists are the ones who enable this poor child to become further confused and who knows what may lie ahead. But it is propaganda, obviously, and it's intended to have its effect, which is to propagandize those who are empty-headed enough that they'll be swayed by this kind of appeal to emotion. And obviously you're not susceptible to that. So to answer your question, I would do both. I would protest it and express my extreme displeasure, and I would put them on notice to say, this better not be something that's happening without my knowledge. I don't want my child subjected to this kind of ideology. You're sexualizing children. And a lot of people go to jail for things like that. You're just doing it under the color of authority, because you're in a school position of authority. A lot of other people, they go to jail for trying to sexualize children and insinuate sexual ideas into children like this. So I'll have none of it. And if I hear anything about it, there will be consequences. Now, obviously, there's not much you can do. There's, you know, there's little that you could do, you know, in any kind of punitive way. But I would say for effect, register your displeasure. But also, seriously, seriously, Megan, if I were in a position where my child was in a school where they were doing this, I would ask, number one, what else are they doing that I don't know about? Which is probably a lot. I'd have my child out of that school so fast. I just wouldn't leave my child there. And I'm only you and your husband can make these decisions for yourselves. But if it were me and my wife, we would have our child out of there immediately.
Full stop.
Yeah. Thank you. That was the first thing I did before my daughter woke up was fill out the private school affidavit. Mm-hmm. Essentially, I would do the homeschool. And then I explained to my daughter, and she loves her class and her time this year, and was, you know, I think she prefers to finish the school year, but that's beside the point of what the parents decide, of course.
Well, we're in January, so there's in essence a semester to go. She's in first grade. It's not like she's in 11th grade. So for her to transition, how's that for a crazy choice of words? For her to transition, I don't know of a better word, so I have to use that one, from a kooky public school to a good homeschool situation at the kitchen table, it will do her no harm academically whatsoever to change in midstream.
Yeah.
In first grade, there's no net effect that will be negative for her.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what I would recommend. And I have a feeling that you speak for a lot of parents who are in the same situation. And it's only getting worse. Thanks, Megan. I appreciate the call. Just bear in mind that it's only getting worse. This is not something that's sort of isolated where some crazy places in California or crazy places in Illinois or New York, they're doing this, but everywhere else is intact. No, it's everywhere. It has permeated the public school system. And just if you want to see, because I know you do believe me, but if you want to see the magnitude of what I'm talking about, get onto Twitter and subscribe to Libs of TikTok, because it's this unending showcasing of TikTok videos. Many of the ones that you'll see on Libs of TikTok are from teachers in public schools of all grade levels, but primarily the younger grades. And they're just chortling because you as the parent don't know, or at least they don't want you to know what they're really doing in the schools. So this is not hearsay. This is not a right-wing conspiracy or people, you know, painting a picture that's not really true. All you have to do is see what they themselves are saying. And they post these videos on TikTok, and they're all high-fiving each other about how wonderful it is that they're subverting the parental authority. So you may say, oh, come on, Patrick, this can't be happening. It's happening. And all you have to do is prove it to yourself by go to a place like Libs of TikTok and just see for yourself. So my advice, my humble, heartfelt advice, my parents my children are all grown up. My grandchildren are growing up. But by golly, if I were back in those early years of raising kids and this was going on back then, which it wasn't, but if this had been going on, oh my gosh, I wouldn't blink an eye. I would have my children out of those schools so fast. And here's the reason why, because you may say, well, what's the big deal? First of all, the big deal is your kids, right? Your children. You don't want them poisoned with aberrant ideologies, decadent ideologies, perverted ideologies. You don't want that because, among other things, your children deserve to enjoy their innocence of childhood for as long as possible. Eventually, they'll lose their innocence, and I'm talking about ideologically. Eventually, they're going to grow up just like you did, just like I did, and they're going to learn about things in the bigger world that they didn't know about. But when you're in first grade, you don't need to know about those things. You shouldn't know about those things. So a huge reason for activating the mama tiger switch for you moms, you know, flip that mama tiger switch, you go into mama tiger mode. A huge reason for that is you got to protect your little ones. And there are some really evil, implacable people out there who think they have the moral high ground, and they're doing everything they can to try to subvert your kids. So activate the mama tiger switch. Flip it. And do what you need to do. But another reason, and I'll leave it at this, is because eventually you're going to have your exit interview, hopefully many happy years from now, but eventually you will. It's appointed to a man to die once and then the judgment, says Hebrews 9:27. That's for all of us. So at some point, sooner or later, you will be required to give an account to the Lord of your whole life. Now, a big part of your life, obviously, if you're a parent, is your kids and your children's welfare. And I know with absolute certitude that on that clipboard with all the bullet points that you're going to be going through during your exit interview, way up at the top is going to be the bullet point about how well or how poorly did you protect your children. So plan accordingly is my advice. Plan accordingly, because the day will come and you're going to have to give an answer. And I don't want to be the guy who says, hamana. I'm not sure why I didn't do what I should have done. And I know you don't want to be there either. 888-914-9149. How about Ernest now in Edinburgh, Texas? Hello, Ernest.
Hello, sir. How are you doing this morning?
I am well. Thank you.
I heard your show 2 weeks ago. I tried to contact you. Friends of mine introduced me to your radio show, which I greatly appreciate.
Oh, great. Please thank them for me.
Yes, sir. I'm the father of Ernesto Ramirez Jr., who passed away 5 days after being vaccinated with the Pfizer vaccine.
Oh, no. I'm so sorry.
Thank you, sir. The cause of death was myocarditis, as now we see, I heard you speaking too, it's happening too much, and it's not natural. Like I said, I've been traveling everywhere trying to bring awareness, trying to help other families, trying to, you know, help myself, my vaccine-injured family, really. I mean, they've grown so big, I just don't know what to do. I mean,
tell me again, how long ago was it that your son passed away so tragically?
April 24th of 2021.
Okay. I'm sorry, what was that?
You know, I was a single parent. I raised my son alone. You know, mm-hmm. He was my best friend. And, you know, I live for my son. Like I said, a lot of people tell me, well, you just need to try to, you know, get over it and pray. I said, you need, you know, I may not be the best Christian in the world, you know, but I do tell people, you know, God didn't kill my son. Man killed my son. And I know the good Lord knows who I am. He knows my heart. And I always tell them, you know, God, we're here to serve God, not for God to serve us. So that's why I'm in this position. I believe he thinks I'm the fighter he needs. So I'm going to be out there and fight for our people.
Well, Ernest, one thing I can say, I hope this is comforting to you, that this little child, so young, he has an even greater father in heaven. As much as you love him, God loves him even more. So know that we are with you in prayer, Ernest. We're supporting you in prayer. I can't imagine the grief and pain you're experiencing. I'm so sorry. I really am. But know that we're praying for you. I'll be right back.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Okay, we are back, as you can probably guess. My number is 888-914-9149. Let's get over to Enrique in Wilmington, Delaware. Hi, Enrique.
Hey, good morning, Patrick. Welcome back. God bless you and
Thank
everyone
you.
At Relevant Radio.
Thank you.
Question for you. Yesterday at Mass, there was a man had headgear on, and I was always
headgear.
Thought, you know, yeah, a hat.
Okay.
And so I was always taught, you know, you don't wear a hat inside the church, and especially during Mass. So my question is it appropriate, and why is it not appropriate? You know, make sense? You know, why you shouldn't wear the hat? What is the reason?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a custom. So if you were to look, for example, at customs that preceded ours in the Catholic Church, you will see that the Jews, the men, when they went to the temple to worship, they would cover their heads. It was a sign of humility. So they would take their prayer shawls and cover their heads with them. So there's an example of where there's a custom that has an important meaning, but customs change from place to place and time to time. So the custom in the West, as it has been for who knows how many countless generations, has been that to remove your hat is a sign of respect. Now, not too many men wear hats anymore. When I was a kid going to Mass on Sunday, it seemed like all the men wore fedoras. And I mean, my dad did, and most of the men did, and they wore suits and ties and such, but they don't do that much anymore. But the men would always take their hat off when they entered church as a sign of respect because the Lord is there. It's a sign of respect to his presence and his house. And then the women would wear head coverings, so a mantilla, a chapel veil, they're sometimes called. So keep in mind, there are some biblical roots to this. So even St. Paul talks about a woman covering her hair as a sign of modesty. But these are customs, and the custom still obtains in this country that as a show of respect, you remove your hat. And you can see this all over the place, especially in like older movies and things like that. If you're at a funeral or something, you remove your hat. But because men don't wear hats much anymore, unless it's like a ball cap or something, but even that, to my mind, would be even more disrespectful to wear a ball cap at Mass. So I don't know. Maybe think about this, Enrique. Maybe the man had had a, maybe he had some skin cancer removed from his head the week before, and the doctor said you have to wear a hat just to keep it, you know, free from anything that might harm it. That's a reason. Sometimes because in maybe an old age, some men have difficulty staying warm, so wearing a hat might be medically necessary. So if we want to give someone the benefit of the doubt, it could be something like that. But outside of those unusual cases, if it's just a guy who wants to wear a hat, he should take it off before he goes into church and leave it off until he comes back out again.
That's what I thought. And, you know, I thought about after Mass, you know, telling him, you know, very polite and everything. You know, just a friendly reminder. Mm-hmm. But then I kind of hesitated because if he would ask me why, then I would be without a reason. So that's why I kind of hesitated, didn't do anything. Yeah. And I said,
I think if you were to just say it's a sign of respect, and people can misunderstand, and maybe you don't mean any disrespect, sir, and I understand that, but other people could think that you're being disrespectful if you wore your hat in church. It's just not customary to do that. That mm-hmm. might be enough.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the other thing too. You know, Puerto Rican, where it's a mostly Latin community, so I'm pretty sure he was told when he was younger, I would think, but
probably.
You know.
Yeah, I saw a guy go into church one time, and he was in front of me. I don't know, 10, 15 feet ahead of me as I was walking toward the church entrance, and he was ahead of me. This is at a church in California. It was a church I was visiting. And he had shorts and flip-flops on, and he was wearing a T-shirt that had in huge block letters on the back of the shirt, blank happens. I won't fill in the blank, but you can imagine what it said. Two words, blank happens. And so I was really offended by that, and I thought, I mean, come on. There's no way he doesn't know that this is grossly offensive, and to wear this into God's house for Mass? So rather than me, the visitor, saying something, and I didn't want to, you know, interpose myself into this, I did go over to the usher, and I pointed the guy out, and I said, that's disrespectful and offensive, and he should be told to leave the church and change his shirt. And thankfully, the usher went over and talked to him. So then I got seated, and I didn't see what happened. But I'm hopeful that the man went out to the car and changed his shirt. But there is a time and place for speaking up. I don't think the hat thing may have been the time to really yourself go into it, but maybe after Mass, if you saw him, or if you mentioned it to an usher. Those are some thoughts that come to my mind. Thanks, Enrique. Let's go to Irina now in Madison. Good morning, Irina.
Oh, hello?
Yes, hi. I hear a little baby nearby.
Yeah, I didn't get the little warning beforehand, so I was a little caught off guard.
No problem.
Patrick, I wanted to share a comment with listeners about the book that the previous caller was sharing that was being read at school, which is horrible and evil. I'm a homeschooling mom with four little kiddos. So we are very much taking these things to heart when we see them in the world. But something that I experienced before was a certain fear of seeing, oh no, this behavior in my children. When my two-year-old son wants to wear the dress that his older sister's wearing because they're playing, you know, castle. And so like, oh boy, he likes to wear dresses. Is this something I should be concerned about? And reaching out to older moms and everything, they're like, no, no, no. Like, he wants to do what his older sibling is doing. So I just wanted to share that we're all so sensitive to this ideology that I think it's easy to freak out when we see it in our home. Like if, you know, the opposite gender child is interested in whatever other thing that the other gender is supposed to be interested in.
I think I know what you mean. I remember when Nancy and I were raising our kids, not all of our boys did that. In fact, I'm not sure if even most of them did, but I think some did, and some of the grand boys as well, you know, where when they're young, 2 years old, they're just having fun with their cousins or their sisters. And if that's what they're playing, then they want to play with them. And they don't think of it in terms of male, female, the way we do, you know,
just
the gender stereotypes are not in their minds at 2 years of age. So we were never really alarmed by it, and we never like stepped in and said, no, you can't play with dolls or anything, because what we found is that to the extent that that happened here or there, over time, the boys gravitate to what the kind of things that boys generally like to do, and the girls generally gravitated in the other direction. But if our girls were playing Legos or something else that some people might say, well, that's a boy thing to do, we didn't care. Let them do it, and they would sort themselves out and find their way.
Yeah, I think that we're just so overly hyped to be, well, but by the world, you know, you hear so much sexualization of children that our children don't see it that way at all. They're just having that imaginative play. And I just also wanted to share a comment about the compassion, though, that we should have towards, I don't know, people who drink the Kool-Aid of the world. It's so sad. But, you know, I meet families on playgrounds, and most of them go to public schools and whatever, conversations come up, but it's not like I'm like, oh wow, I'm leaving now, because I mean, obviously if I saw something offensive, I would leave. But I think so many people buy the ideology because of how effective Satan is in putting half truths into that. Right. I think the ways that we sin ourselves or listen to lies is because there's half truths in them. Like in the story about the boy where his parents tell him he's beautiful. Like we tell our children they're beautiful all the time because they are. So I think people see that and they're like, oh, this is good. Of course I'm going to believe it and champion it. But obviously there's so much evil also in there that I just wanted to say that having compassion towards folks who, you know, we're trying to bring to the light is really important, instead of just having that like aggression and hatred of them. We can hate the book, but hating the mom who's, you know, championing the book, that's something I am trying to be more sensitive to.
Sure. Well, I mean, the last thing I would do would be to try to foment hate. I don't hate anybody. But if, you know, if somebody's coming through my window at 3 a.m. to try to harm my family, well, I don't hate that person, but I'm going to do everything I can to stop that person from causing harm. So you can stand up and take a stand and be vigorous without hating anybody. You can still apply that teaching of Jesus to love your enemies and at the same time oppose your enemies. Just because you love your enemies doesn't mean you have to let them stand, that you have to stand by and let them wreak havoc on your life, much less so on the lives of your children. I hear what you're saying, though, Irina. I do. And it's that balance. But here's the thing. You're a young mom with four young kids. The difference between now and, say, when I got married 42 years ago is that this ideology did not exist in the culture, did not exist. And not only that, I shouldn't say that. There were people who did these things. Don't get me wrong. That's not what I'm referring to. But the ideology did not have, it hadn't yet been weaponized. Because there was no delivery system. There was no internet. There was no you know, there was no Amazon. There were no apps or websites, of course. So the big difference now, and maybe this is to your point, why parents are more their radar is up more now, because in those days you were aware that people would do things like this, but it didn't really affect society and it didn't get to your kids. It didn't get to you unless you were really looking for it. Well, now you're swimming in it. You can't get away from it. It's in the schools. It's everywhere. So I think naturally parents who are right thinking and intelligent like you are going to be far more vigilant than we ever were 40 years ago, because we didn't need to be.
Yeah. Yeah, those are easy to for me to think like, wow, those would be the good old days. But I think that's every age has its problems, right?
Yeah. Every age has its problems. But there is one axiomatic truth of the universe, and that is, with all the problems that were prior to now, and some of those I was aware of because I lived through it, a lot of them came before me. There are plenty of problems in human history, no doubt about it. But there's one axiomatic law of the universe that is true, and that is, it didn't have the internet. The internet changed everything. It did. And this delivery system, which is great, I use the internet all day, every day. Much of my life involves, in some way or another, using the internet. But it is the delivery system that has permitted these ideologies to be weaponized and then with pinpoint precision delivered directly to you and to your children on a daily basis. And no prior generation in human history ever had to deal with that.
Yeah, no, I mean, thank you so much. That's so true. And that's a conversation for a different topic as far as children and internet and being prudent and... Yeah. But that's, yeah, you hit on a good point there, Patrick. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Irina. God bless you and your beautiful family. Bye-bye. Four kids, you say? What's the age range?
Oh, boy. Pray for us, listeners. 5.5 to 8 months.
Love it. You probably are very busy and get very little sleep, I would guess. Well, God bless you, Irina. Thank you so much for that. Appreciate that. Well, there you go, young Thomas.
I tried.
Just scoop that up. Your cultural knowledge is expanding. I'm proud of you.
Well, thank you. So, all thanks to you. That's why I listen to the Patrick Madrid Show, you know?
Ah, there you go. That's a little John Lennon for you from his last album, Double Fantasy. Half of that album is absolute rubbish.
But this one...
That's the half that he didn't sing on. The other half that he did sing on is pretty beautiful.
Oh,
this is a beautiful boy.
Yeah, you know, that's what I guessed after they said it, you know, a few times.
If you listen to Double Fantasy, it'll immediately become clear which half of the album I don't like.
Okay.
But I do like the John Lennon part.
Nice. Hey, thank you.
All right.
We got a little time left. I think we can do another call.
I think we can get to Gary in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Good morning, Gary.
Morning, Patrick. When I'm at Mass, before we say the Our Father, the priest will introduce the Our Father by saying, "We dare to say." Mm-hmm. I often wonder why they say that, because Jesus gave us that prayer himself and gave us permission to do so.
Yes, well, the reason is because, and this is from the Latin that the priest says before the Our Father begins, and that is the very fact that we can even address God. He is the creator of the universe. He is all of those things that, you know, are so beyond us that we as creatures should feel a sense of awe that we are... that we have this great gift to be sons and daughters of God, to be adopted sons and daughters, and to, as the Bible says, to be able to boldly go before the throne of grace. So it's in that sense. It's to remind us of the awesome gift that we've been given, that it's not something pedestrian or that we have a right to. This is a great gift. And so when the priest says that we dare to say, he's referring to that spirit of awe and respect.
Yeah, I kind of was thinking on those lines, but then I also think on the lines that God doesn't sort of like us to, he likes us to trust him more and not question that. See, for me, that's how I think. Like, in other words, you gave me permission and I accept the permission and I'm going to pray the Our Father. I think in those lines that you're saying, mm-hmm. and I figured that was the answer, but I don't think that way. It's just for me personally.
Fair enough. And it's not my place to, you know, to judge or anything, but my advice would be that I think you should think that way. And I think that if in your prayers and meditations, you ponder what exactly you are being given this gift to do, it should fill you with awe, I think. Remember what the Bible says. It says, fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And it's not servile fear. It's not cringing fear. It's the sense of awe that we get to do this. Thanks, Gary. I'll be right back.